Welcome back, folks. Just a reminder, Mike Haas and I will host a special edition of this show live from the New Orleans Sports Foundation Super Bowl kickoff and honors luncheon. We'll reflect on a year of achievements in sports, honor the legacy of Tom Benson, celebrate the leadership of Gail Benson, look back on the rich history of hosting the Super Bowl, and highlight preparations. Yes, number 11. Super Bowl 59. Don't miss NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell and a who's who in sports Friday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WWL. Really looking forward to spending time with Mike Haas and doing that. And we're going to have a great lineup of guests that we'll have an opportunity to talk to. So we're very, very excited about being there for certain. So much going on, too. Obviously, the Saints are off this weekend. So you have this hiatus of their bye week, and when they come back, they'll be playing the L.A. Rams at home at 3:05 start on December 1st. They'll be off. We got the Tigers playing. Got others, Tulane and others, that are playing big games. A lot to talk about. Just wanted to say, too, that relative to this show, Tommy Show, Scoot Show, the Sports Talk, and others, if you just download the Odyssey app, you can follow. It's that easy. You can't always listen to the entire show live. We know that. Odyssey makes it easy to listen when you want and how you want. So just download the Odyssey app. So every Tuesday in the 11 o'clock hour, we set aside time for folks that are participating with the NOLA Coalition. And we've been the beneficiary of meeting with a lot of great people that are doing great work for great reasons, making a huge difference in our community. They truly are difference makers. And it's that collaborative effort of everyone working towards whatever their mission statement may be, what their vision may be, trying to improve individuals one by one or sections of the city, different groups of the city. It doesn't matter, because when the tide rises, it rises for all of us. And we can only succeed if everyone kind of succeeds together. And we all want the same thing. There's all kinds of cliche statements about that, right? So it's been an honor to have these folks on. Well, today we have Leroy Brown. He is the lead of the Opportunity Hubs ecosystem development, and he joins us. Leroy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Leroy, if you would, tell our listening audience about OHUB and what it is.
Okay, so Opportunity Hub was an organization that was started about 13 years ago by our co-founders, Rodney and Shantara Sampson, in Atlanta. And at the time, it was during that big tech boom, and the goal was to, you know, help their drive diversity in the tech space in Atlanta during that time. And as you know, they had a huge boom, and I think that city has been growing ever since. We were fortunate enough to get OHUB over here to help with the Louisiana energy expansion. And we're kind of doing something very similar in Louisiana now. You know, we're looking for underserved founders, black and brown founders, to try to take advantage of the expansion of energy here, be it wind, solar, or climate tech. Anything that, you know, our founders are working on, we're pretty interested in trying to get them some support.
So when we look at, let's talk about the need. Obviously, I love data, and when you look at data, especially in the high-tech field, what you do find is some underrepresentation. I'm not clear as to what all the reasons are, but obviously blacks are underrepresented in this group. Hispanics are underrepresented in this group. Females as a whole are underrepresented in this group. Two groups that are either at their representative percentage of the population, whites, and who's above, almost double their representative number, are Asians. Why is that?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, when you start to look at the tech space is highly technical. I think sometimes, you know, we have folks who spend more time in arts and science and in those different spaces. If you listen to, you know, somebody like a Dr. Kaba-Mackey or even the guys over at GNO Inc., there's been a big push for our students to spend more time, you know, working in that STEM space. So mm-hmm. by getting more exposure to STEM and by getting more exposure to technologies and the opportunities to bring, you know, problem solving for like great, you know, tech ideas around climate resilience, all those different things. But giving those folks the opportunity to get their ideas to come forward, to, you know, get venture capitalists to check them out, we're hoping that we have the opportunity to kind of change that narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I look at school systems across the country. We just had, you know, our school system here with a $36 million financial mistake. And you kind of scratch your head, and I'm very mystified by how we find ourselves in this predicament. But sometimes I feel like we're one step forward, two steps back.
Well, I would tell you why I feel like we are more forward than not. And sometimes we don't get an opportunity to talk about this. I think that at the state level, you know, that there is opportunity. I know there's an investment that has been made in our infrastructure. And as you know, there is a demand for labor, a demand for labor across the country. So with that being said, I mean, the opportunity we have is to create something that will, you know, those folks who may have with the school here or trained here, give them the opportunity to come back home and raise their families here. I think that's the one thing that all Louisianans that I've talked to from, you know, be it from Monroe, Ruston, all the way down here to, you know, Lafayette or New Orleans. I think everybody kind of wants the same for that population. So there is opportunity there. You know, I can never speak to the challenges that we face, you know, based on, you know, past decisions or current situations. What I can tell you what's in front of us is an opportunity to get more folks involved in the workspace, to get more folks in workforce through technology. So, and that's happening, you know, at an excellent rate, like at 2-year colleges. There are a lot of different disciplines that just require certifications for people to have the opportunity to participate. So I know more about the opportunity at this particular point in time, actually, than I do about the challenge.
Leroy, but I think you would agree, it's not only an opportunity for us as a country and for us to succeed and have our economy succeed. It's an absolute necessity, right?
Yeah, it is really, man. You're talking about a rethinking of traditional jobs in that traditional workspace. You know, for us to, you know, look at coding in a different way, for us to look at the opportunities like technology, or, you know, for our state, you know, we're looking at carbon capture, decarbonization, the role of hydrogen. I mean, we're a huge energy state. I think we're fourth overall. So there's going to be opportunities there with that, you know, all of the above philosophy, because we still have solar and wind, other energies that we can lean into. So, you know, I really do believe, you know, at this particular moment, that there are some opportunities and some resources that have, you know, that may give us an opportunity to kind of change the narrative down here in Louisiana. I know the whole state, the whole country does have its opportunities right now, but I do believe just being able to focus on creating opportunities for those folks that want to come home or that are home and want opportunities in technology or in technical field, I think it's great that we have an opportunity to focus on that.
What do you think is the biggest challenge? Because this requires execution, right? I mean, we can talk about mm-hmm. opportunity all we want, but you don't have opportunity unless you have execution to create that opportunity, mm-hmm. right? Real opportunities. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the biggest hurdle for that?
Well, I think when we're talking about the climate tech space and what we're doing, I think it's more access to capital. I mean, you know, we're working to not only create an opportunity for the founders to come forth, to have their ideas incubated, you know, to kind of fine-tune them, but we're also looking for opportunities to get venture capitalists and the folks that invest in those projects in the room. But also, I mean, you know, I think that, you know, the other thing that's taking place, too, is that move, like I said, towards STEM. more push to get more of our kids involved in the technology space in order for us to take advantage of some opportunities too.
Yeah, you know, and we've been fortunate, and I think you appropriately outlined this earlier, as to how many folks are really involved in the promotion and the advancement of STEM education here, and to provide more opportunities for experiential learning, to try any number of ways to get kids to pique their curiosity, so to speak. You know, STEM had fallen by the wayside for so long, not only here in New Orleans, but throughout the country, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I guess, you know, and everybody has that whole mantra of, I don't necessarily like math. But I think one of the things that we're finding is that, you know, obviously, you know, mathematics, science, technology, and engineering is definitely the wave of the future. It's a way for us to close the wealth gap as a whole. I mean, there are opportunities now for 18-year-olds to come out with certain certifications and make as much as $70,000 to $80,000 a year. And if some folks think that's a, you know, that's a big number, we can, even if we tone it down to $55,000 or $60,000 a year, if you're talking about 18 years old and being able to start out in that space, and the you know, the sky really is the limit when it comes to that. But it's just going to, it is going to require us, you know, to kind of rethink where we put some of that focus. And then also you have STEAM too, whether you have art mixed in as well. And I think in our culture, you know, we're also looking to drive the conversation between art and, you know, art and climate itself, you know, being able to kind of message through our artists, but also get our artists involved in the creative side of creating solutions that are going to be good for our, are going to be good for our city in regards to climate challenge.
Leroy, I always liked math. I just didn't like algebra, trigonometry, or calculus. You take those three out of the math. That was good.
Yeah, well, when you take those three out, we can't go too much further, man. We can't go too much further. You know, it's like, you know, back in the day, we would sit in the classroom. We'd go, when am I ever going to use this? And to this date, I don't know when I'm going to use some of that stuff. But I definitely believe that, you know, math gets us to thinking, helps our critical thinking, and that critical thinking helps our problem solving. And by, you know, by creating more problem solvers, man, I think we're gonna be it's just gonna give us the opportunity to get more folks involved in this space.
Absolutely. Now you guys have an event coming up, I think November 21st, right? Tell us about it.
Yes, man. So at November 21st at the shop right there at CAC. We're going to have our $100,000 Climate Tech Bootcamp Challenge. And so we have taken 37 founders through our incubator. We now have the top five, and on that Thursday night, we're going to have the opportunity to have them to judge the competition, take the top person, and make it a capital investment of $100,000 in that particular concept or project. So yeah,
how many of these have you guys done before? Have you done these before?
This is our third cohort. Our first one, we did in March. We was in conjunction with NOE, and I think we had about five of our founders come out of that particular opportunity. Then we had cohort two, which came through in June, and we funded two projects out of that. And then we'll have this one in November, and then we'll have one person or maybe two come out of that. It depends on what the judges think.
And I guess you guys continue to follow them along their path, right?
And that's the part about the ecosystem development that I focus heavily on. You know, we have a great partner in Greater New Orleans Inc., which gives us opportunity to connect our founders with industry partners. So when they come through with these great ideas and we're able to fund them, then we're able to kind of try to get them plugged into our economic ecosystem and look for opportunities to get their projects as active as we possibly can. I mean, we've had some victories with, we have a guy who has an alternative insulation, Joel Holston, one of our founders from cohort one. And he's going on to, you know, work with New Orleans Finance, Finance New Orleans, and they're actually insulating now about 13 homes in the area, which should drive down, you know, the cost of electricity for those homeowners. So, we stick with them, and we continue to try to look for either opportunities for them to participate in another incubator. You know, we have several around here. Idea Village runs an excellent incubator. I think Propeller also has one. And Finance New Orleans just had an excellent pitch competition. So it's heating up around, you know, getting startups and small businesses the opportunity to shine and get some finances and get their projects active.
I read numerous articles about that young man with the insulation, and it was off and running, which was very exciting, and some of the others that y'all have had, too. I've got a couple of texts here, Leroy. How do folks get in touch with your organization?
A couple ways, man. You can reach out to me directly at leroy@ohub, and that's ohub.at. Or you can jump. You can join our app, which can help you kind of, you know, if you want to just kind of join the app and watch what's going on and spend some, you know, and spend time with us there. You can jump on at the shop, theshop, and that's .ohub.at. And that way you can, you can join our app, man. You can see some of the things that we're doing. There's some founders in there and the other folks, and they're just having conversations around new energy and climate tech.
Absolutely.
And that person, you can also register for our event that's coming up on the 21st.
On the 21st, and I think y'all have another one in March of 2025, if my memory serves me correct. I was doing some research.
Yeah, man. We will either have it in March, or we will have the first quarter. Our quarter starts April, May, June. So we either have it in March or in that first quarter of the April, May, June time frame. And like I said, man, we will, after we have November 21st, we will start our recruiting all over again. And the goal is to continue to, you know, bring these founders forward, encourage them to, you know, be confident in what they're doing and give us the opportunity to get them some exposure.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Leroy Brown, ecosystem development leader at Opportunity Hub. Best of luck to you on your function Thursday night, November the 21st, 7 p.m. at the shop at the Contemporary Arts Center, the CAC.
Yes, 900 camp. Will, yep, 900 camp.
And they will live stream that with fireside chat and pitches as well. Where can they catch that?
Again, you go on the shop
dot on the shop
ohub.at, and that will give you access to our Pixel platform inside the app. And man, you can watch and just kind of watch these guys as they tell you a little bit about their projects.
Absolutely, sounds exciting, Leroy Brown. Thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck to you in this endeavor.
Always an honor to be here with you, Noah. Appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for the support.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. The NOPD recently announced the adoption of new executive protection policies and protocols. Ronald Surpass, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola and the former NOPD chief, joins us to talk about it. Ronald, welcome to the show.
Hello, Newell. How are you?
So, doing well, Ronnie. How you been? Back to school, teaching class? What are you doing these days?
You know, teaching, consulting, living the good life. But no, it's been really good. I hope all's well for you, too.
same. Things are going well.
Well, remember, Noel, you can't be a profit. You know, the deal with consulting, we're all over the country, thank goodness. We have some good work. But, you know, you can't be a prophet in your own town. So sometimes you got to go someplace else and you can give some good advice, maybe.
Absolutely. Sometimes that reputation doesn't travel afar, does it?
No. You get the good and the bad. The good and the bad.
So, Ronnie, this is something that a lot of folks have been waiting for. I guess you and I would scratch our heads and say, why is it taking so long? But it's finally here.
I'm sorry.
But no, it is finally.
It's funny that you said the obvious.
But it's finally so here. What would we expect to find in this? Because I'm not sure that they've revealed a lot of what is going on with this policy or protocol.
Well, first off, given the truth that I've not read the entire report done by the law firm, I skimmed through it enough to know this. Overwhelmingly, the things that they found that VAPI did were already existing policy violations. So sometimes leaders are forced to suggest that they're going to have a whole new policy to deal with something, when in fact, all the policies by and large existed. It's just a breakdown in supervision. So at the end of the report done by the attorney, which is a very good report, it's incredibly long, they point out some pretty clear things. Make it clear the mayor is not a chain of command authority within the police department, if that's what you want. You know, clear up a few things about, well, here's one that'll throw you out your chair. You're not supposed to claim hours worked when you're at your kid's game, or you're not supposed to claim hours worked when you're at home and your cohort is having a dinner at the tableau with the principal. Look, Newell, at the end of the day, it's always been a policy violation to be involved in events that can question your ethics and character. It's always been a policy violation to drink on duty with a gun. It's always been a policy violation to lie about the hours you work. It's always been a policy violation to lie. So some of this is interesting on the edges, but at the core, all the things that were the essential questions of misconduct by VAPI were already in policy. They just weren't being managed.
So, but that's always, you know, the challenge, right? When you have leaders within an organization that decide the policy is in place for everyone else, and because I'm a leader, I get to deviate from the policy and do things my way. What are your observations? I'm sure you may have even consulted about this issue. How do you resolve that? I mean, is there a third party that should have control that doesn't fall within the chain of command of either the NOPD or the mayor, or internal audit of their policies and procedures on an annual or biannual basis?
Well, I'm sorry. I thought this more than 10-year consent decree paying hundreds of, you know, tens of millions of dollars to the monitors was supposed to be doing this.
You were wrong.
I was. You know, this continues to strike at the very heart of what the consent decree was about. If we go back to 2010 and 11, when we negotiated the consent decree, the issue as a 10,000-foot level was favoritism associated with promotions, favoritism associated with duty assignments, favoritism associated with discipline, favoritism associated with the conduct of the police department. Here we are more than 10 years later, $50, $60 million in the hole, and I don't know how Judge Morgan cannot see, obviously, that those things are still existing. A crisis with the promotion process, a crisis with the VAPI investigation, these speak to the very core issues that the consent decree was supposed to fix. Not do you have a policy that checks a box, not that you have a policy that you read every now and then for accuracy. What in the culture continues to create these crises? And that doesn't appear to have worked incredibly well in all areas. In some areas, I know it's worked. But, you know, these are the kind of questions that I'm sure the judge has to ask herself when people are saying, hey, it's time to get out. Well, that was $60 million spent to not stop VAPI. That was $60 million spent not to stop this issue with the promotion exam that is freezing the careers of majors, captains, lieutenants, sergeants, and officers who are all waiting for promotions. I'm not casting blame on anybody, but how can we be here now when the civil service position, the civil service department's been producing promotional exams for as long as it's been in place? And guess what, Newell? Hold on to your pen. There's always going to be people who are upset with the findings of the test. Not everybody's happy.
Oh, sure.
There's always going to be issues.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's interesting to me. You talked about, you know, friends and this and that. And then when you don't do that, they say it's bias. So when you actually hold a disciplinary record against someone and you score like zero, maybe on moral compass, an individual that admitted to payroll fraud, and all of a sudden there's bias. Excuse me? I mean, what does this mean?
Again, I'm just going to ask how many millions of dollars were not spent on streets, schools, sidewalks, and lighting to pay for monitors who were supposed to be checking on all this for the last 11 years? These are fundamental flaws in thinking, right? These are fundamental flaws in thinking about how to discipline and hold account a police department to policy. This speaks much bigger than whether or not use of force was investigated properly. It seems like they're doing that. This is a bigger issue.
Yeah, because this is really all about the credibility, right? I mean, of your leadership, of governance, how this is going to work. I mean, accountability. I mean, one of the first questions I ask is, like, who makes a decision to deviate from these executive protection protocols? Is that the mayor? Does it require documentation in order to set up an audit trail so that maybe a one-off situation that's unique in nature doesn't become, you know, the standard?
Well, it's interesting you put it that way because I was blessed, right? I was appointed by a governor. There's only 50 of them. I was appointed by three different elected mayors. What a coincidence. Not a single one of them had any of these kinds of problems. Is that biased?
Yeah.
Not a single one of them. Not even near. Not even close. I mean, you remember when the young man was running around New Orleans killing people and he threatened Mitch directly?
Mm-hmm.
There was, and Leon directly? There was no conversation about how we were going to provide protection. They were happy to have the protection, and we had a duty to provide them the protection. We didn't negotiate on how the protection was going to be provided. We certainly didn't say, let's stop by the Tableau and have a drink and think about it. It's look, there are so many men and women in the police department doing all the right things at all the right ranks, but something is going in a direction that would not give confidence that the fundamental questions of accountability have been solved 10 plus years later, $50, $60 million later with a consent decree.
Yeah, I mean, how do you leave lurking? And this is one of the things that irritated me, is that we have an allegation now that the deputy chiefs that were engaged in this, I guess, the subjective component of looking at the disciplinary record and interview, whatever, that they engaged in bias. And you just leave that hanging. What does that say about the leadership of the organization? I don't understand. I don't think they understand what it is that they were actually alleging. And what it meant to those. I mean, I know if you were on that committee, I know if I were on that committee, I'd be screaming from the high heavens. You know, what are you talking about? Don't throw that out. Give me an example. Give me some data. Give me something where you say I'm wrong in my assessment of a particular individual. Prove it to me. But don't throw that out and ruin my career and saying that I'm engaged in bias, which is an intentional act. Right.
Well, exactly. And, you know, here's the funny thing. I could be corrected, and I'll say it because I don't think I'm going to be corrected. But when we negotiated the consent decree, the concern about this kind of chicanery in the promotion process meant that we followed the civil service rule only, that the civil service department created an exam, that they had outside external experts grade the exam, which they did this time. And it was the list done. Why was it? And I don't know when it happened. When is it that they put into the consent decree an agreement to have these panels that would naturally be accused of bias because now you have a third component that had not been in there before? Even when we were a backwards police department in my time and Richard's time, you know, we never had a supplemental agreement to have another level of grading beyond what civil service did. Maybe there's a good reason and I don't know it, but on the outside, why would you create a third level of review? Civil service creates the test. They hired external experts who do this all over the country every day. Mm-hmm. And they had external police leaders of rank equal or higher who came and graded the test based on the experts' witness, based on the experts' agreements. And then why would we have another layer on top of that that goes right back to the 2011 problem of y'all are taking care of your friends? These young men and women who were supervisors in this process were destined to be accused of biasness. They were going to be accused of biasness from the very beginning.
Oh, absolutely. So, that goes with everyone. It's why I've never, you may have participated. I've refused to participate. I've been invited to be on assessment teams. Who knows how many dozens of times. Don't want it. There's no upside.
Yeah. You know, I've done it. And when I've done it, it gave me an insight to how professional these professionals are. And when I was in Nashville, I hired the firm that was quoted in a Supreme Court decision on these kinds of ideas, I think 20-something times. It can be done correctly. But, you know, the chief is going to always need to have some room at their level to say, I get this list. And I'm sure, as sheriff, you would agree, you can test for sergeant, you can test for lieutenant, and even test for captain. But at some point, when you get to the deputy chief or major level, you got to be looking at people in a holistic way as the chief and only the chief.
Oh,
this
absolutely.
Is the decision I am making. And these because are civil are the, service appointments. They're forever.
Yeah, those are the individuals that are going to execute on the policies that I put in place, the strategies that I put in place, the protocols that I put in place. They cannot be naysayers, and they can't be really, truly, totally independent of me if I'm going to succeed.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with that relationship. It's in every Fortune. You know, they always say police should be like a business. Okay. How many CEOs are forced to hire people they don't want?
Right.
I can't think of any.
At that first level. I mean, that's kind of the issue that went on in this presidential election, because they thought maybe the level below the cabinet member level ought to be appointed as well. Said, yeah. I mean, because that's the one that's going to execute everything, right? It's like, well, and if they're not on board with you.
The people who opine about this in the media, who have less support than Congress now, as trust in, they talk about stuff they've never done.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't begrudge them their careers, but police are way above a level of trust and confidence in the U.S. Congress. The mainstream media is below the Congress in trust and confidence, according to Gallup, for the first time probably in history. So at the end of the day, people who make decisions ought to be thinking about how people are making decisions, not people who are opining about what they read. Like,
Right. You remember
Theodore Roosevelt? Get in the arena for a few minutes and suffer this blood, sweat, and tears, and then we can have a far better conversation as opposed to, I heard you should have done this.
Right.
And that's why, look, there's only one superintendent at a time. Chief Kirkpatrick's got a ton of things that she's dealing with. But I think this notion that what was supposed to be done in the consent decree 11 years ago is still out there if you think about VAPI, if you think about some of these questions, and that's something she has to confront no different than you and I would have to confront.
No doubt, absolutely. And I know exactly what course of action I would take, and I think I have a pretty good idea which one you would take as well. As always,
well,
Ronald,
you know, the public would have already known what we were going to do.
There's no doubt about that. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time, your insight. Have a great week, my friend.
Talk soon. Bye.
All right. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, tonight at 6:30, you have a choice. Catch the Pelicans weekly on the Big 870 WWL AM, followed by the New Orleans Pelicans at Dallas Mavericks. Pregame at 7, tip-off at 7:30. Or you can keep listening to Sports Talk, followed by the Saints Hour with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis and the voice of the Saints, Mike Haas, on WWL 105.3. FM and the Odyssey app. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Jan Moeller, Invest in Louisiana. We'll talk about the tax plan, the special session, what's going on relative to that. And in the back half of the 12 o'clock hour, from a political perspective, we'll talk with Clancy Dubose, political editor and columnist for Gambit and WWL, Louisiana political analyst, about the machinations in Baton Rouge as well. A lot of information flowing in and out. Seems to be some reluctance. We'll dig deep to find out exactly what's happening when we return. So stay with us. This is Newell on WWL.